What's up, everybody? Talking baseball on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial, 10% off, squarespace.com/CBSSports. Use the offer code FUN, F-U-N. Adam Azer and Al Melchior. Al, give me some of your favorite Everetts.
Chad Everett. I'm just really thinking of the first Everetts that come to mind.
Yeah, go for it.
Learn a lot.
Jim Everett.
Yes.
Everett Golson, the Notre Dame quarterback.
No, not a favorite, sorry.
Oh, yeah, you're a Michigan guy. I forgot about that. Everett White.
Yes, that would be my new favorite. Everett.
Everybody's new favorite. That would be Scott White's baby boy. Congratulations to Scott White.
Already
father.
Already picturing his Braves jersey.
Yep, there you go. Everett White sounds to be like an NFL tight end.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I was picturing more like left field for the Braves.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be tough. I think Scott will take either one. Scott is a first-time father. He's not here today. I don't know if he'll be here next week, but congratulations to Scott. Everybody tweet him and send him the congrats. We're going to talk Rookie of the Year. We're going to talk second base rankings, the Reds rotation. Michael Kadire is a Met. Madison Bumgarner, there's something to be said about him, apparently. Looking forward to that. And where, oh, where has Al ranked Robinson Cano in the second base rankings? First, Al, injuries, news, and notes presented by the good old Squarespace. All right, Jacob deGrom, NL Rookie of the Year. He went 9-6 with a 2.69 ERA, had a 1.14 whip, a strikeout per inning. He's good. What do you think about DeGrommy?
Yeah, well, we totally saw this coming, like around June, didn't we?
Yeah, well, I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but yeah.
Yeah.
He looked good right out of the gate, but I don't think people expected it to keep up.
Absolutely not. I mean, I just think about, for example, how I underestimated Matt Harvey when he first came up with the Mets. And then even, you know, the following year, because he had the, you know, time at the end of the season a couple of years ago. And then, you know, I was sort of skeptical of that performance. And Harvey was a highly touted prospect. But I just thought, well, it's going to take him maybe a couple of years to round into that form people are expecting. And he kind of hit that and then some right away. DeGrom was always considered more of sort of a second-level prospect. And yet, you know, he's right up there with Harvey and some of the other, you know, top young pitchers that we've seen in recent years. So even though it was unexpected, he did nothing in this Rookie of the Year campaign to suggest that he can't come back again next year and give us a similar performance.
Which teams will have better rotations than the Mets next year if everything falls into place? I mean, 1 through 5, they're going to have a really good rotation.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting with them and the Nationals because the Nationals come to mind as
they're
probably
an obvious, right, candidate.
Yeah.
But the Tigers might not have Scherzer.
Right.
Who knows what Verlander is going to give them. I mean, the Mets, I don't know. I haven't thought about it. Top five rotation.
Mets have to
on
be
on paper.
There. Yeah.
Beginning of the season. Jose Abreu is the AL Rookie of the Year. And like DeGrom, hard to imagine he can't keep it up.
Oddly enough, I think there's a better chance Abreu fails to meet expectations than DeGrom.
Well, I think expectations are higher for him.
Yeah, they are. They are. But, and you know, you've brought it up in past podcasts, but the second half, he was really a different hitter.
Yeah.
And it's more than just what showed up in the surface stats in terms of the process. He was a very different hitter. He went opposite field much more often after the All-Star break. So he was productive, but just in a very different way. We didn't see that many home runs. We saw a lot of gap base hits, very high batting average that I don't think was necessarily fluky, but it's which,
but like very high batting average, right?
Yeah.
You know, he was hitting, I don't know, what did he hit in the second half?
I'll
look it
was,
it up.
Yeah.
It might have been, it might have been like 380.
Yeah, I don't think
at
it was that high.
For
but
a stretch.
Yeah, maybe, right, you know, when I say not fluky, maybe that second half average was, because I don't remember what it was exactly. It certainly had to be well over 300. But I just wonder which Jose Abreu we see next year.
Post All-Star, he hit 350.
Okay. Well, that's, yeah.
Yeah, he hit 374 in July and 376 in August. That's a two-month stretch in 375. It's amazing.
But, you know, maybe he is a guy who doesn't have the 40 home run power, but is more of a gap hitter who does hit, you know, I don't know, 340, 330-something over a whole season and does it consistently. I'm not saying that's what I expect. It's certainly not what I have projected for Abreu. I don't remember top of mind what I have projected for him. And because the White Sox geographically come early in the alphabet, Chicago White Sox.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the order that I've been doing them. So all your White Sox and Cubs, they've been projected. But
good.
Yeah. But anyhow, so I sort of split the difference because honestly, look, he's proven that he has the power potential. And I don't know if it's a matter of fatigue, which is something that I think Abreu himself claimed.
Yeah.
And he just adjusted to make the most of what he had available to him, or if it was really more of a conscious decision to be a different type of hitter. So we will see.
But yeah, as your number three first baseman in a first round pick, right?
Not a first round pick. And that may have, I think we've done a mock first round in here. I probably had Abreu in the first round, but that was before I really looked more in depth into these two halves. And, I'm probably not going to wind up with Abreu very often because I think he'll go in the first round in a lot of leagues. And I'm not prepared to do it because if we get second half Abreu, he's good. He's maybe a top five first baseman, certainly a top 10 first baseman. But I don't. That's not a first round first baseman.
I don't know. I mean, if you got a 345 batting average and 20 home runs, how do you think that – where would he finish at first base?
I think probably I'd say around fifth.
Yeah. He had, I think he hit seven home runs in the second half, but the second half is in 81 games.
Right.
So that's why I gave him 20 home runs in this scenario. Al, are you changing your tune on Madison Bumgarner?
I am, and if you take a gander over at those rankings again, you'll see something a little different than when I first rolled mine out. Because Scott and I had Madison Bumgarner right around the same area. I think Scott, what, has him 10th, maybe?
Yeah.
I had him, I think, 11th.
And I have him 5th in points, 7th in Roto.
Yep. I moved him up, I can't say it's really because of what he did in the postseason, but what he did in the postseason catalyzed me to take, well, it was a bad verb choice, it got me to take a deeper look at what's going on with him. And what I found out is that he was a different pitcher in the postseason, but it goes almost all the way back to the beginning of the second half of the season. It goes back to early August, where he started throwing his cutter less often, relying more on his four-seamer, and pitching with much better control. It's almost like he looked at the first half and took a look over at Phil Hughes and said, well, that's who I want to be when I grow up.
Oh wow.
But except he's done it much better. done it much better than Hughes has. But no, he's pitched since early August. He's pitched with that kind of control.
Yeah.
And he's also become more of a fly ball pitcher. Okay. But it hasn't the fly ball tendencies haven't really hurt him, not in the late season and definitely not in the postseason. And he's getting a lot more pop-outs and still getting plenty of strikeouts and not walking anybody.
I'm surprised you know this, considering San Francisco starts with an S.
Well, you know what I did? I started with the World Series teams.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, it's kind of like, that's their little reward.
How do you project free agents? How do you project Pablo Sandoval?
Because at that point I did it pretty much just assuming he stays.
Okay.
And then of course if he goes elsewhere I'll revise it.
The Mets signed Michael Kadire, first really fantasy impactful thing that we've seen. Michael Kadire, 2 years, $21 million. The Mets give up a first round pick, which is 15th overall. The Rockies get a compensation pick in between rounds 1 and 2. And Kadire is mid-30s, I think he's 36. What do you think?
Well, I know we're going to talk about it from a fantasy perspective, but I just want to say that from the Mets' perspective, I actually think this is all right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good price tag.
It's a very good price tag. A lot of other analysts have pointed out that prospects and picks tend to be overvalued. I don't think giving up the number 15 pick is too much for the Mets to get Kadire, and it fills a need that otherwise they would have had a really difficult time filling without spending more money or giving up prospects. So from their perspective, the move makes sense. From a fantasy perspective, I don't like it at all.
No, how could you?
Well, here's the thing, because when I first saw the news of this, I was completely prepared to kind of take the contrarian position because predictably a lot of people came out and said, Citi Field, it's this pitcher's park, what a disaster. And Citi Field really has earned a reputation, I think, that's not accurate. And they're bringing the fences in again. They're bringing the right center fences in. When they moved in the fences 3 years ago, they made it a pretty decent power park. And it's probably going to get a whole lot better. But Kadire's road splits, the last two seasons in particular, not very good. Not very much power there. And I don't know that City Field's dimensions, even though they've been sort of friendly, or actually very friendly to right-handed hitters, I don't know that they're going to help them as much as nearly as much as Coors Field did.
Well, so wait, what were you saying about his home road splits? Because they're pretty extreme.
Yes. The road splits are not good, and in particular the isolated power, pretty unimpressive for a corner outfielder.
Yeah, it's not a good thing for him. And the Reds, I know you wanted to talk about the Reds rotation.
Well, I think it's interesting. First of all, because I've been researching it very recently as I'm, making my way into the seas.
Cincinnati, right.
But they've also sort of been in the news because the Reds are apparently open to trading a starter or two. Latos was one name that's been thrown out there. I've seen Cueto involved in rumors. So they've got a bit of a log jam because you've got the five that pitched all year last year. Well, I shouldn't say all year because Latos was out with injury. Bailey didn't finish the season. But you've got the core five that pitched for them for most of the year. You got Tony Cingrani, who barely pitched for the Reds, and when he did, he was terrible. But he's back. And then you've got the Cuban defector, Raisel Iglesias. I'm not sure I pronounced the first name correctly.
It sounds good to me, Al.
Okay. But he's been awfully good in a very limited sample of innings in the Arizona Fall League. And he's in that mix. So now you're looking at seven starters potentially for those five spots. And, it really makes a lot of sense for the Reds to trade one or two of them. But I think that shows that they like what they see so far from Iglesias. So in terms of an impact of early trade rumors, I mean, that's one that I see, that Iglesias is a guy to put on your radar as maybe a late rounder.
Okay, Raisel Iglesias.
And then Latos is sort of interesting, too, because even though he didn't pitch a lot, he was sort of, in many ways, the same old Matt Latos with a very good ERA and whip. But his velocity was never really there. Didn't strike out a lot of guys.
And I'm done with him.
You're done? See, I'm thinking...
It would have to be like 12th round. Nobody cares.
Oh, see, that's what I'm thinking, is that a lot of people may take that approach with him.
Yeah.
Worry about his health status. And
I didn't really like him going into last year. I don't know what it was about him, but I never really was impressed watching him. I never understood how he put together the numbers that he did. He wasn't like a very stuffy guy. Now, like as in...
Yeah, I got it. Yeah.
I don't know about his congestion.
Really, yeah, or attitude.
Right. Yeah. but I don't know. I just didn't see like him being a guy who would have long-term success. He's better. I guess he's just a gamer. I guess he's just a better pitcher. But
well, and the stuff wasn't there last year.
Right,
but
and he still figured it out. The stuff was not very good at all last year, but he figured he was fine. How was his performance?
Yeah, no, I mean, like fine. I said, good ERA and low whip.
I don't know. He doesn't excite me. I want exciting pitchers.
He doesn't excite me, but if he falls the way I think he will into those middle rounds, I'll be targeting him and could see him being on my team in a lot of different leagues.
Right. Yeah, I guess he could be like a Hiroki Kuroda type, steady.
I think he's better than that.
Yeah,
I think if the stuff he had does come back.
Oh, well, much better.
And I think it could. Because it's he had a lot of health problems last year. And, if he comes back healthy and he puts a couple more miles per hour on the fastball and he's striking out 8 per 9 again.
Yeah.
Then, suddenly he's what he was before last year. He's a top 20 starter.
I'm in, Al. You win. What else do you want to talk about from the AFL?
All right. Well, I mentioned Iglesias, who's been really impressive. Hasn't given up a run yet. I think in six innings now. But a couple other players who, now again, just to sort of preface this, because every year there's always like one or two guys in the AFL who do really great, and I get really excited about them, and they don't do anything. So the track record long term for the top prospects of the go is good, but usually the first year after You know, there's not a lot. But so I'm falling for certain players again. And just to stay on the Reds for a moment, Jesse Winker, the outfield prospect, been one of the top hitters in the AFL so far this year. In fact, here's the stats. He's had 68 at-bats. He's hitting .338 with three home runs. That's a .559 slugging, .440 on base. So he's been one of the more productive hitters there. And the Reds, I don't think he's ready now, but the Reds do have an opportunity in left field. They didn't pick up Ryan Ludwig, his option for next year. There's really nobody that stands out. Chris Heisey, I think his opportunity is sort of come and gone. So they'll get somebody. They'll find somebody to plug the gap in there. But I think if Winker can take what he's doing in the AFL and carry it over to, I would assume, starting the year in the minor leagues, probably Double A, he could probably rise up quickly, be a mid-season call-up, and be an impact guy. So,
all right,
you know, I like him, and somebody I was
good
really
name.
In a very good name.
People, we're gonna have a lot of fun with that.
That's right.
All the puns,
especially with the CBSI.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh yeah, that's gonna be good stuff. He's gonna be sponsoring our show.
Exactly.
And Anthony DeSclafani.
Yes, I have to admit, as a Marlins fan, probably watch them more closely than other teams. Certainly just go to games and watch a lot of the games on TV. And yet I really completely overlooked how good his peripherals were this year, because the overall performance was pretty lousy, the very high ERA. But he, and I'm going top of mind here, so I might not have it exactly right. I think he struck out 24 batters versus 4 walks. And roughly, I think it was like 30,
all right, everybody. 31, let's see
31 innings since you're looking.
Let's
it up.
See how good Al Melchior's memory is. Anthony DeSclafani, go ahead, keep talking.
So, and he's putting up a similar ratio in the fall league. In fact, now I have to wonder if maybe I reversed the numbers, because they were very similar to the ratio that he had with the Marlins this season in a similar number of innings.
Okay, 33 innings, 5 walks, 26 strikeouts.
So that's the Marlins ratio.
Yeah.
So the 24-4 is actually what he's doing in the fall league.
Okay.
But again, very similar ratios, both, in the neighborhood of, 30-ish innings. That's a great ratio. And the problem with the Marlins is just that he had a very, very low strand rate. So the few hitters that he was letting on, he was letting, I think, about half of them score, where a typical strand rate is, between 70 and 75%. And that's something that can be fixed, or something that just varies just randomly.
I was hoping that he was going to DeGrom it after his first start. His first start was at the Dodgers on May 14th, and DeSclafani went 6 innings, gave up 7 hits, 2 runs, with a walk and 7 Ks. And it was all downhill from there.
Yep.
But anyway, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
But you're not going to see a lot of walks there. I don't think they're even – I don't remember what the hit rate was or the BABIP rate was, but but anyhow, he deserved a better fate, and he's continuing what he did with the Marlins in the fall league, granted against much lesser competition. But all the focus was on Andrew Haney last year, and DeSclafani, when I go back and look at the command that he had, I think he had the more impressive audition.
Well, I want to remind everyone, today's podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Let you easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. And it's always getting better. Squarespace constantly improving their platform, new features, new designs, even better support. And if you want help using Squarespace, you probably won't need it. Go ahead and get on there now and just start making a website. But if you do need help, there's a great customer support team working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And starts at just $8 a month. You're going to get a free domain name if you sign up for a year. So go and start a free trial right now on Squarespace. You don't need a credit card to get started. Use the offer code FUN and get 10% off. And you'll be showing your support for our show, just like Squarespace is. That's Squarespace. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. As we look at Al Melchior's second base rankings right now for the 2015 season, of course, number one has to be Robinson Cano, right, Al?
Of course not.
Of course not. But, okay, fine, he's not number one. He's got to be number two, right, Al?
I don't think so.
No. Robinson Cano is number three in Al's second base rankings, behind Anthony Rendon and Jose Altuve.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure about Altuve. That was a tough call. And what it really comes down to is that I'm a little bit more confident in Altuve doing the things that built his value this year, which, of course, were stealing a lot of bases and hitting for a very high average. And I think it's obvious that that average will regress somewhat. But I trust him to contribute in those ways more than I expect Cano to contribute with power, which is how he was able to power and run production, which is how he was able to achieve the number one ranking that he achieved so often when he was at the Yankees.
Yeah, Cano was number 5 in points, number 6 in Roto. He's going to be 32 years old. We'll come back to him in a second. I wanted to give this stat, my favorite stat that I found today, Al. So Jose Altuve was the number 1 second baseman by a lot over Rendon, and he had 56 steals. Now, Altuve had a 377 OBP. Rendon had a 351 OBP. But Rendon scored, got to do the math here, 26 more runs. 26 more runs than Jose Altuve. So Altuve had a 377 OBP compared to 351 and yet scored 27 fewer runs than Rendon. So my point is, if the Astros start hitting a little bit better, like we would expect them to do, Springer, maybe a little bit more consistency from Chris Carter, maybe Jonathan Singleton, just have him bunt so he puts the bat on the ball or something like that. Whatever. I can't see how Altuve doesn't score more runs, even if the batting average comes down.
Good favorite stat.
It's good, right?
It's very good.
And runs are overlooked in fantasy, but they're very important. I mean, Matt Carpenter had over 120 runs scored in 2013, came way down in 2014. A lot of his stats did. But yeah, so that's something to keep in mind. Meanwhile, Cano, batting average, OBP, they were consistent. They were the same as what we saw with the Yankees, but slugging .454 after 5 straight years of .516 or better in slugging percentage. .454 for Cano, and he actually slugged 30 points better at home than on the road. Al Cano had a career high ground ball rate, way above what we saw with the Yankees, you know, in his great years, and a career low home run to fly ball ratio of only 6.1%. So what happened to Robinson Cano? Because the stat I kept giving out last offseason was that all but one of his home runs from 2013 would have gone out of Safeco. And yet, here he was, a guy who hit 14 home runs.
No, that's a great point. Because if he can right what was wrong with him, the venue shouldn't really be an obstacle to Cano being, you know, potentially the number one second baseman again. But yeah, that ground ball rate was pretty persistent late into the season. I'm not sure if late in the year, because the power numbers did pick up a little bit late in the season, and I haven't really looked into what happened with the ground ball rate, but it was dramatically higher.
Yeah,
for at least most of the season. So that's a concern. And then again, I think the Mariners are concerned, and they'll probably have a busy off season again. But as of right now, it's really hard to project Cano for much better run production, even if he hits for more power, with a lineup that I think is just not going to support his value that much.
And Rendon and Altuve are both going to be only 25 next season. Is Rendon a first-round pick?
Yeah, absolutely he is.
So he's totally legit.
I think he's legit, and one of the bigger concerns around him the last couple of seasons was the injury history. That's not been an issue. He's young and likely to get better.
Number 4 is Brian Dozier. Number 5 is Jason Kipnis. Number 6 is Ian Kinsler. And number 7 is D. Gordon.
Yeah, and Scott's got him 8th, and both of us have caught a little bit of flack for that ranking. And I can't speak for Scott. We've talked about it a little bit, so I think we're sort of on the same page here. But I think there's some questions about Gordon's job security and what the Dodgers plan to do on the free agent market, or maybe via trade, and then you've got Alex Guerrero possibly needing a place to play this year. Arboena, who I just butchered that name.
Arboena, yeah.
Thank you.
I don't think I did it right either, but I know who you're talking about at least.
Yeah. So hopefully the listeners will know who we're talking about. Not that I think that he's necessarily going to push D. Gordon out of a out of a job, you know, but he would likely be playing shortstop if the Dodgers went with him. But it's just there's a crowded middle infield situation there potentially. And look, if you ask me to, you know, pick a course that I see playing out, I mean, it's going to be that Gordon will be their second baseman going forward. But I just have a little concern there.
Gordon didn't have a great second half either. He did hit .284, but four walks, 47 strikeouts in the second half. And he only stole 21 bases in 31 attempts, as opposed to 43 in 52 attempts before the All-Star break.
It seemed like a lot of the big stolen base producers from the first half really cooled off in the second half. And I don't really know how to explain that. It might just be coincidence. I mean, I wouldn't think there'd necessarily be that much of a fatigue factor involved.
I would.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of Billy Hamilton's case, because he couldn't even make contact in September.
Yeah.
You know, so he dropped off a lot.
Well, you look at Hamilton and Gordon, these are not guys who had played full seasons in the majors before. Even though Gordon's not a rookie or anything, he was a part-time player.
Yeah, well, the first year he was up, it was close to full, wasn't it? Or at least
I didn't think so, but I'll see.
Take a look, yeah. Maybe it was just a partial season where he played pretty much
every
day.
But I don't think he was. Well, he was an everyday player?
For a period, at least, yeah.
All right, Al. You're on.
But, you know, there may be something to that. And the thing with Gordon is I think a lot of people do question his ability to hit for average. And while the on-base thing, I think, is a legitimate concern, I think as long as he's speedy, which I assume he'll be for a few seasons to come, he's going to be able to hit for average.
No, I mean, Gordon had never played more than 87 games in the majors.
So that year where he had, I think it was 300 right on the nose?
That was his first year.
That was
56 games. 304.
Okay, well, I guess it was just maybe a couple of months where he was playing regularly then.
And obviously he had a minor league season that year, so it was a long season for him. But maybe just the rigors of a full 162 games, in his case 148. He doubled his career high in at-bats, well, slightly more than doubled it, from 303 in 2012 to 609 last year. Just speculating. How about we go to Neil Walker, Ben Zobrist, Dustin Pedroia, Colton Wong, and Daniel Murphy, your 8 through 12.
Yeah. yeah, it's kind of an interesting combination of upside and downside there. In terms of downside, Pedroia certainly stands out. And, you know, who knows what kind of shape he'll be in this season, because he was never healthy. Really, it's two seasons in a row that he's not been healthy for pretty much the bulk of the season, and the power's just been absent. And Ben Zobrist, I kind of wrote him off a little too quickly in the first half this past year, but, you know, not somebody who I think is going to improve his production going forward. I think the best we can hope for is maybe another season like this past one. And his main asset probably still is just the fact that he's eligible at three different positions.
Where'd you put Profar?
Now, we haven't gone that deep with our ranking, so I can't give you an exact number, but I'd say probably lower teens at the absolute highest.
Really?
Yeah.
What about Odor?
About the same neighborhood. Maybe a little higher, actually. But just to get back to these guys, because
yeah.
I talked
right,
about
I'll
the
think of some
guys I see as sort of downside guys. Colton Wong, clearly, a lot of upside there. I think he's going to be a more powerful hitter than we saw him a year ago. And that's not just based on what he did in postseason. And Walker, I think he was overlooked this year. I think there was a little, kind of a mild breakout there that he's capable of sustaining and maybe even building on a little bit.
What about Joe Panik? Sleeper appeal next year?
Not much. I fear he's going to be a little overrated. And that's, again, another case where I think maybe the postseason exposure maybe sort of inflate the perception of him for some people. He's going to give you a batting average.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really not too confident he's going to give you much else.
What about, is Josh Harrison not eligible?
That's correct. He is third base, outfield only, at least to start the year.
What about Dustin Ackley?
Yeah, not really, don't have much interest in him.
What about love? Sorry. Is that Heart?
That is Heart.
Yeah. My dad and brother just saw them in concert Sunday.
Oh, I thought of you. I saw the billboard on the expressway heading home from work and saw they were playing.
I don't really like Heart that much. I just, guilty pleasure. What's the one I like? These Dreams.
These Dreams, yeah.
Love it. Great song.
Sure, they played that one.
Speaking of which, I went on my Taylor Swift rant a few weeks ago, got an email from Taylor Swift.
She listens.
A person who created, it's so funny, Al. This person, after that rant, created an email address. It's like tsshakeitoff@gmail. I don't know.
That sounds like that's legitimately her.
I don't think so. And then she has a song called 22, I believe it's called. So he says, "Dear from Taylor Swift, Dear Adam and friends, I was wondering how many bases you thought Todd Frazier would steal next year. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 22. And that is a line straight from the song.
That's pretty clever.
It's very funny.
Frazier stole 20.
Did he?
Last year. So 22, you know, maybe it's his Taylor Swift year. I projected for 18.
His Taylor Swift year.
So I was going more the Steely Dan projection.
18.
Oh, that was 19 was the song. Hey, 19.
I don't know. That's
I can't think of an 18 reference off the top of my head.
Matt from Jenison, Michigan.
I'm sorry, but just a Taylor Swift thought here.
Yeah,
so,
please.
Okay, I've not listened to her new album, 1989. But is it sort of a sequel to the Smashing Pumpkins, 1979?
I actually think I might like the Smashing Pumpkins even less than Taylor Swift.
Wow.
For whatever reason, that was always, you know, 90s rock is like my thing. The Smashing Pumpkins, always my least favorite band. I hated them. Hated them. Cannot stand to listen to that guy's voice. And some people love them. I get it. Just not for me.
I'm not that big on them, but it's funny how people who hate them really hate them. And it's,
I think it's because they have like a polarizing sound, you know? It's just kind of weird because I like all the other bands that are sort of like the Smashing Pumpkins. I hate the Smashing Pumpkins.
They're
doing fine, so yeah. I felt like I could say that.
I was going to say they're sort of like your Billy Joel for me, but I don't hate Billy Joel. I just think he's overrated.
Yeah, because what's the comparison here?
Well, because I felt like Billy Joel was very overrated compared to his contemporaries.
Well, some people are crazy.
And so sometimes I can get a little lathered up about that.
Yeah, you're weird. All right, Matt from Jenison, Michigan says, "Dear Happy, Suede, and Buck."
Is that Swede?
Swede? Sure. Swede and Buck.
I still don't know.
How do you spell Suede?
S-U-E-D-E.
Oh, S-U-E-D-E. Okay. Happy Swede and Buck. I have no idea who that is. 10-team mixed league, 25 rounds, OBP instead of average, and add hits. Keep 2 of 3. Rizzo in the 12th. Poppy in the 17th. Hamilton in the 23rd.
And that is Billy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Makes a big difference now, I think. All right, 2 of 3.
CZ, come on.
Rizzo and Hamilton, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think about Hamilton?
I don't think it's that easy.
I'm excited for Hamilton this year.
I'm less excited.
Why?
I think just because his stolen base efficiency was pretty lousy last year. I thought he'd come in and steal 70 bases and get caught maybe 10 times. Maybe 15. But I think he was thrown out 23 times.
Yeah, but a lot of it was pickoffs at first base. And, you know, okay, so this is after the All-Star break, I was watching a game, Yankees-Reds. The Yankees broadcaster said, I spoke to the Reds broadcaster, and he said a lot of those caught stealings were actually Billy Hamilton being picked off from first base because he hasn't learned the pitching staffs yet. He hasn't really, it was almost like he hadn't learned how to be a base stealer. So I think that number comes down. The caught stealing. I think he becomes more efficient, and I just think he becomes a better player.
I mean, look, I do too. It's just a question of how fast and how much improvement. So yeah, I'm not as jazzed as I was a year ago.
All right, so Nick from Massachusetts, another Taylor Swift reference. He says, "Dear haters, gonna hate. Okay, haters gonna and hate. After seeing the cannon on Yordano Ventura last night, I'm considering targeting him in my dynasty league next year. This league will have a ton of bench spots and 12 pitching slots, 5 starters, 7 relievers. How high should I target him, and what do you expect him to do in the future?"
All right, so this one's obviously been sitting in the inbox for a while, huh?
Yeah, these are all old ones.
All right. targeting Dynasty League, how high should you target him? I mean, I'm just, oh, in terms of when to draft him. I still think he's like a middle rounder.
Yeah.
And because it's a Dynasty League, if we're talking single season league, I'm waiting till late rounds, which means I'm probably never going to get him. Because even as hard as he throws, he wasn't really that much of a strikeout pitcher.
But don't you think that could change? I mean, that was his first year.
Well, maybe it could. Maybe it won't. I mean, there's a lot of hard throwers out there. They're all in the Marlins rotation, but a lot of hard throws out there that don't strike anybody out.
Yeah, but they're sinker ballers.
Evaldi's not.
No.
Hardly.
Yeah, and he teased us with strikeouts earlier in the year, right?
Yeah, and look, I'm not saying Ventura is bad. I'm not saying he shouldn't be drafted at all, but there's upside there. So in a dynasty league, you got to go middle round at the latest for him. But
this is my big prediction now, my bold prediction. Attach it to me. This guy says, what do you expect him to do in the future? I expect him to have Tommy John surgery.
That's you could attach that to anybody and have
he's
these
my
knots.
Number one candidate to have Tommy John surgery. Just too skinny to throw 99 miles per hour that consistently. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, the Chris Dale's elbow
Chris Sale
is
will be number
attached.
Two. Yeah. We get a scare every year. I'm not saying anything fantasy wise in terms of that. Like, I still think he's really good, whatever, but it's just, I don't know. I just, you have these weird gut feelings sometimes, and I'm just afraid of that for him.
Yeah, well, happened a lot last year,
yeah,
early on.
Chris from Gothenburg, Sweden says, hi, Scooby, Shaggy, and Fred. By the way, Happy Suede or Swede and Buck were 1999 Black Sox.
Oh.
Anyway, here's the question from Chris. Keeper question, DH. Chris Carter or Carlos Santana? It is a 10-team head-to-head roto league.
Hmm. Well, if it was head-to-head points, it'd be Santana easily. I still think Roto, I'm going to give a slight edge to Santana there. And just a little addendum, too, on Carter. One of our most recent podcasts, we talked about, it was the last one. We talked about first baseman. And I talked about Carter as kind of a sleeper for me. Well, I'm going to have to sleep deep on that because he's not even first base eligible.
Oh, really?
He's DH only going into the year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
It hurts. It hurts his value.
By the way, these offensive categories in Chris's league, home runs, RBI, and extra base hits is another category. I guess that would probably help Carter, right?
If it's number of extra base hits, which I'm going to assume it is, and not number of extra bases.
Yeah, that's dumb. You shouldn't have home runs and extra base hits. It just makes home runs count double.
Well, no, because it helps the doubles and triples hitters.
It does, but then extra base hits should just be a category, or
just total bases. I think is a better way to go with that. But I'd say that probably penalizes Carter in a way because I don't think he gets a lot of extra base hits that aren't home runs.
That's probably true.
I'll look that up so you can edit that out.
You know what? No, it's fine. I just. It stays, but I just don't like that extra base hits category if you already have any other type of extra base hit in there. It just doesn't really make
sense. Oh, I am so right. 21 doubles last year.
Yikes. By the way, Chris is from Sweden, and his email said, Skikat från min iPad, which I just thought was fun.
Sent from my iPad in Swedish, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
From Kyle. Question for Al specifically.
Well, I looked at this one ahead of time, and I'm probably going to disappoint Kyle, but.
All right. As a saber nut myself, I'm all over Fangraphs. Thing of beauty for fantasy ballers. However, I have heard Al mention on a few occasions the following stat: batting average on fastballs over 93 miles per hour, or something to that effect. Don't remember what the actual mile per hour was. Where does he find this stat? Which site? I reckon it could be particularly useful for daily fantasy.
I sure would like to know, but I don't remember ever. Citing that stat one single time. I think Scott may have.
Oh, interesting.
And so I have never seen that. And if I find it, I will let everybody know.
Yeah, but Al does, on Baseball Reference, he gets the batting average on like sinker ballers, right? Or something like that. Like, what?
Well, batting average on the trajectory. So like batting average for ground balls, batting average for line drives. And that's actually, that is on Baseball Reference, but we also get that in-house as part of our staff.
No, but I remember you had Pablo Sandoval as a sit one day or a start one day.
Oh, right. Yep. Yeah, against ground ball and fly ball pitchers. So it wasn't wasn't on the particular pitch.
Right.
I think Brooks Baseball, or as you sometimes like to call it, BrooksBrothers.net, right. Might have those batting averages on certain pitches. And I know for pitchers, for sure, they've got the batting averages allowed on each different type of pitch. And also the slugging and isolated power. Those are cool stats.
All right, a few more emails here. Chris in Chicago, Illinois gives us, Dear Isaiah, Joe, and Dennis.
Those would be Pistons.
They would. I was confused why it would come from Chris in Chicago. I'm really having a tough time deciding on my keepers. 5x5 head-to-head, 10 teams. So streaming decent pitchers isn't too tough. Do I dare keep all hitters? He's got Abreu, Altuve, Bautista, Desmond, Springer, Cespedes, Tehran, Jose Fernandez, Cliff Lee, and Matt Harvey.
Well, I mean, even without just looking at the players, he's choosing five keepers. So I think in that situation, it's usually defensible to keep only hitters.
Yeah.
But Jose Fernandez is on that list, and so is Matt Harvey.
Well, Fernandez, when's he going to pitch?
June or July.
Yeah, you can't keep him. No way. That's a top five round pick there in a 10-team league.
I understand that, yeah, but to toss him back in the pool for the next year.
Right.
Okay, let's go through the hitters. All right, so Abreu, Bautista, they're really the only surefire keeper hitters he's got. Jose Abreu and Jose Bautista.
Not Altuve?
And Altuve, I'm sorry. So those three, Desmond's borderline, Springer's borderline. I'd say Cespedes you can forget about. So I think you should keep at least one of Fernandez and Harvey. I would actually lean Fernandez, even though he'll probably be less useful next year than Harvey.
How about Tehran?
I'd rather have Fernandez and Harvey as keepers.
All right. My only thing is, like, it's a 10-team league, so I don't know that you need to even think about 2016. You might just play for this year every year with your keepers.
Well, I mean, again, when you have somebody of the caliber of Fernandez or Harvey, I think that those are guys that you could plan on protecting for a really long time, even in a shallow league. And, again, beyond those top three hitters, I mean, you toss Desmond back. I don't know that you're going to miss him that much in a shallow league.
All right, let's read one more from Joe Bavaro from Escalon, California. This is our nut farmer. Our almond guy.
We got a new shipment.
Yeah, we sure did.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're delicious, Joe. Great work. All right, he says, I've mainly been a head-to-head points player, but recently I ventured out to Roto. Did well this year, but I noticed in all my Roto leagues I was severely lacking in steals and saves. I think this is a product of my points league not valuing those statistical categories very highly. Next year I'm planning on playing in a fairly high-stakes Roto league, and I don't want to start the year behind the eight ball. Besides consulting your Roto rankings, was there an efficient way to compare two players with vastly different skill sets at the same position, i.e. Altuve versus Cano at second base? I'm currently rereading Larry Schechter's book to try to pick up on some stuff that I might have missed last year, but I thought you guys might have some ideas.
Well, that's a great idea right there. That's pretty much required off-season reading. Larry Schechter, I think it might be called Playing Fantasy Baseball. Something with Fantasy Baseball in the title. But, yeah, lots of great tips there. And really the best way, and, you know, this isn't really adding on to what Joe's asking about because he's saying he's going to consult our Roto rankings, but those do, or at least the ones based on projections in my personal rankings, stem from standard gain points. So that's a formula you use that builds in the value of each contribution in every category. So it weights the value of a stolen base versus a home run versus an RBI versus a run versus a batting average point. I think Larry Schechter may actually talk a little bit about different ways to calculate that. He actually there's another formula besides standard game points you can use. So again, just read the book is the best thing. but to have some formula that gives weights to those different categories. And if you don't have the time or inclination to do that on your own,
but I got to interrupt you here, because I think what an important thing is with Roto is a big difference between points and Roto is that a guy you take at second base, it's going to impact other players you take at other positions because of categories. So it's, you know, comparing Altuve versus Cano, you also have to compare taking Ellsbury versus, just because I can't think of anyone else off the top of my head right now, Jay Bruce.
Okay.
You know, like, you've got to balance your steals and your power. You know what I mean? Like, if
sure,
you take
but that's more of a, I don't know, for me, that's more of an on-the-fly type of decision.
Yes, it is. Right. So then I don't know. I don't.
Because you really do, a good idea is to go into a draft or an auction with a pretty good idea of how you evaluate players at the same position versus each other. And then when you invest, you know, in second base versus outfield, you know, then you make those decisions about, okay, well, I went for steals at second, so now I need to, you know, so now I'm not going to target Ellsbury.
So it's hard to say who's more valuable between Altuve and Cano unless you know the rest of your roster.
And see, I disagree, because if you use, like I said, a standard game points value, and on our site, and unfortunately I can't tell you exactly where, but anything where you see 5x5 value, that's the standard game points number. And so that's going to be an index that's going to project the value of every player with each category weighted.
But so, if you have Altuve and Hamilton on your team, you know, like, that might be overkill. And you might be making them less valuable, you know, than they are in a vacuum, because you're sacrificing so much at power.
Well, and I agree.
And RBI.
But I feel like that's something that you can't really deal with. I don't know. And again, tell me how you deal with it. But I feel like that's something I can't deal with until I'm in the draft or the auction. Because,
agreed, yes.
You know, you don't know who's going to be available at the points where you're willing to take them or at the price you're willing to pay. And I'm sorry, I just want to rewind a second. Unfortunately, Scott's not here to make his rewind sound effect.
I'm not going
to
do it.
Yeah, no, I can't. But, you know, I'm you know, telling people to look at standard game points. Well, actually, you don't have to do that, because that gets baked into auction values. So really, the key is, if you're not going to calculate your own auction values or gain points, then just find a source that you trust that does, and use those to evaluate players at the same position. And I know it sounds like basic advice, but I don't think there's a better way.
Or a simpler way. Haven't really put that much thought into it. Comparing Cano and Altuve, I just think I know. Look, I was surprised that Cano only hit 14 home runs. So, but comparing them now, I know if I draft Altuve, then I'm in good shape. If I draft Altuve and one more steals guy, I'm in good shape in that category. I might win it. If I draft Cano, then I have to probably look at it in the outfield to guys who have more steal capability. But you know, the other thing with Roto is that you have play so many hitters that it's hard to say one is gonna, like. I don't want to overreact and say if I draft Cano at second base, now I need to find steals somewhere else, because there are so many other hitters that could, you know, you could get 5-20 steal guys on your team. You don't need to get Ellsbury. You don't need to get Hamilton, Billy Hamilton, something like that. You could get Ian Desmond and Todd Frazier, whatever. Yeah, making your Roto roster is a very much on-the-fly thing. So I don't really look at it like, oh gosh, how do I differentiate between these two guys? One is so steals heavy, one is so power heavy. I would just say, you take one, and then you try to fill in the rest of your team, knowing that you that you are strong in one area and not strong in another. But I will say this to Joe and everyone else: I don't like punting saves or not really paying attention to it, and I like focusing on those two categories. Scott says it very well. There are two categories that are very easy to win, and I think you got to make it a priority. I don't know that you need to go crazy, but at least try to be in like the top four in steals, because it's not that hard to do.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think, you know, between the two, that's the one that you should, you know, definitely target more on draft day, because I'm, you know, kind of finding out after all these years that it's easier to get saves during the season than probably just about anything else.
You know, it is. But at the same time, I wonder if it's easier to do well in saves during the season. Because, like, you could pick up the waiver wire guy or whatever, or bid on somebody who's getting saves. But a lot of times, those guys are on bad teams, or they're not that good to begin with. You know, like, if you got Melanson, then that was great.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were playing the White Sox guys throughout the year, then that was a struggle.
But there were so many good, valuable closers that were not draft day, you know, targets. Britton, Doolittle.
That's true. And there often are.
Casino,
but everybody wants them. When they become available, everybody's in on.
Well, and that's why I like to, you know, feel somewhat secure when I come out of a draft that, you know, I've got at least a base for saves. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've seen people pull it off many times where, you know, they come away sometimes intentionally with, you know, few to no saves, and they put it together. I don't feel totally comfortable doing that, but I've seen it done.
I don't know
that you could really do that with steals very easily. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to pick up James Jones? I mean,
because the steals guys score runs a lot of times too, you know?
Okay.
Like, you can't punt steals, and you're missing out on good players. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Whereas you can punt saves and fill them in with starting pitchers who are giving you wins and strikeouts.
I got what you're saying. Okay.
But steals guys are just too good.
Right. Okay. That's a good point.
And they impact your team too much. All right, guys. Thanks for the emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Al, great job.
Well, thank you.
You're the man now, dog.
Well,
Scott White.
Scott, come on back.
Congratulations, Scott. Take your time. Al doesn't need you. He's all right. See you guys later. I'll try to talk to you next week with third base. Bye.